You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we get advice on how to get mental health care if you've never done it before. First, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a Madison business owner. It's part of a series we're airing this month on women in southern Wisconsin in partnership with Midwest Mujeres.
Have you ever been on a trip that changed the course of your life? Catalina Sanchez of Madison has. She told me about this as part of a storytelling project with Midwest Mujeres in Madison. Sanchez has always been interested in art. Her mother noticed this early on, so when Sanchez was in middle school, her mom sent her to New York City to spend time with a friend who created large spray paint murals.
We had like about 3 murals that we had to work on. So we were taking places that were kind of vandalized, not very welcoming, like, you know, offensive words, that kind of thing, and we were making it into something beautiful. And I just thought it was so inspiring that, you know, you can take whatever you have and always make it better.
Sanchez would carry that inspiration with her through the rest of her teenage years, which weren't always easy for her. She wrote about it in an essay.
Unfortunately, I haven't always been proud to identify as Latina. Growing up, my biological father, who was Latino, wasn't in the picture, and it made it hard for me to understand my culture and be proud of it. Growing up, I felt that I never fit in anywhere. I didn't fit in with the Latinos at school. I was too white because I didn't speak Spanish or understand it.
Eventually, Sanchez dropped out of high school.
I just wasn't myself. I wasn't doing anything. I'm just someone who always needs to be doing something and be proud of myself.
So she went to Madison College and got her GED. When plotting her next move, Sanchez would reflect back on that trip to New York and how happy she was creating art. So she enrolled in elite nail school. Now she specializes in nail art, creating these colorful, detailed sets on tiny personal canvases.
So it took me a little bit to get the hang of it, but it's just something that I'm very passionate about and I love doing. It makes me feel good, makes my clients feel good. It's, you know, a way for people to express themselves.
Sanchez got a job in a high-end salon, but it wasn't a great fit. So she took a risk and opened her own business, Graffiti Nail Salon. The name, inspired by that life-changing trip to New York.
When I was working for a salon, I thought people were coming there because of the atmosphere. It was a very, like, high-end luxury salon. So when I went off to my own place, it was just like an office suite. It wasn't even like a salon-style suite, but it made me feel very good to know that people are coming to me because of me, and they like my work, and they know that I take pride in what I do.
And her favorite part of the job?
And I will say for me, not only is like empowering them through their nails and like making people feel better about themselves, but I also get to meet a lot of different people from all different stages and walks of life. I meet young people, I meet like older people, like I meet so many different people and they just teach me so many things about life.
A set of nails can take her hours, plenty of time to get to know her clients.
I actually do have a sign inside my salon that says, welcome to your therapy appointment. I mean, nail appointment. Yes.
Sanchez says her evolution from insecure teen to business owner has been empowering.
Because I just feel like my identity has been something that I've always kind of struggled with. Now that I'm a little bit older, I really do take pride in being Latina. I think it is just being around other people who are comfortable with themselves and, you know, being in your community of people who are like you. When you're around a lot of negativity and people who don't want to see you do good in life, you start to believe those things as well. So just like finding my place and like a good group of people to be around has really helped me.
Catalina Sanchez shared her story with us as part of a partnership with Midwest Mujeres in Madison. We've partnered with the organization to share stories of women who live in southern Wisconsin. After I talked with Sanchez, her business, Graffiti Nail Salon, experienced a devastating fire. Everyone was safe, but she lost everything. She told me via email, though, that she's not letting the tragedy stop her from pursuing her dreams. Sanchez's community has helped her with supplies and a workspace until she finds a permanent location once again. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Maureen McCollum.
This is Central Time. Do you want to find mental health care, but looking for a therapist feels like climbing Mount Everest? If so, you're not alone. Research has found that people who would benefit from mental health care often don't get it. In part, that's because of stigma or a belief that it's not really necessary. In part, it's because people don't know where to start. There are also some big structural barriers to getting treatment. Many Americans live in places, for example, with a shortage of mental health care providers. Then there's paying for it. We're talking about how to find mental health care. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been seeking therapy or another form of mental health care? What barriers have you run into along the way? What sort of things have made the search challenging? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Karen Landman is a senior reporter at Vox covering public health. Before becoming a journalist, she trained as an epidemiologist and physician with specialties in internal medicine, pediatrics, and infectious diseases. Dr. Landman, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob. Great to be with you.
You wrote a guide for Vox on the basics of how to seek mental health care. You start with an example, your own. Can you talk about some of the things that kept you, when you wanted to, from seeking some mental health treatment?
I mean, I probably would have benefited from therapy beginning in my teens, but didn't really seek it out in a serious way until just a couple years ago. And I'm not going to give away my age, but much well out of my teens, let's say. And I think, you know, there were a number of barriers along the way. First, it just felt like I didn't have the coverage for it and it was too expensive out of pocket. And then, you know, in the medical field, and for a time I was also in the public health service, which is a uniformed service, there were great disincentives to not get mental health care documented in your medical record. You then had to admit that you'd received it. And so there was both, you know, sort of a soft stigma, but also a very real disincentive to seek care. And then, you know, it just took me a while to get a job after that had great benefits, like the one I have now that pays pretty well for mental health care. So even once that happened and I found some recommendations of who to seek care from, I just didn't want to have that first conversation on the phone where I knew I was going to try talking about some of the challenges that I wanted help with. And it took me a long time to overcome all of that to actually get someone on the phone. Once I did, they were so understanding and it just felt like, God, why did I wait this long? So I have a lot of empathy for folks who take a while to get there.
And so you wrote this guide. Now, let's imagine someone out there, not in an emergency mental health situation, but with maybe an ongoing thought, something's not quite right. Maybe care could help. I have no clue. What would you recommend to them as a starting point?
So I think it really depends on what resources you already have at your disposal. If you don't have any healthcare providers at all, and you don't know anybody in the healthcare field, it can feel really daunting to put a name to what you're going through and put a name to the kind of help that you seek. Mm-hmm. And I just want to tell people that folks who provide mental health care don't expect the people who come to them seeking that care to know what they need. They are expert not only at providing the care that people need, but at helping people navigate the system and figure out what's right for them, whether it is a couple sessions of talking to somebody, whether it is a specific kind of therapy that lasts a few months to sometimes, you know, a year or more, whether you're somebody who might benefit from medication, whether other kinds of modalities like support groups or mutual aid or all kinds of other types of therapy are going to be useful in your life and dealing with the symptoms that you have. So I would hope to bring people a little bit of calm about the question whether they need to know what they need before they start seeking care. If you do have some health care at all, if you have a primary care doctor or anyone in healthcare that you know and trust, you can start by just speaking to that person and saying, you know, I feel like something's a little off for me. I'm having some differences in my mood that just are not the kinds of things that I have had in the past. I'm not enjoying things the way I once did. I'm having some other, you know, sleep problems or problems dealing with people who I love and care about in my life, trouble with work. Do you know what I might do for this? What kind of help I might need? You know, primary care providers are actually pretty experienced with providing some aspects of mental health care, with connecting people with therapists, with prescribing a lot of pretty common anti-anxiety and anti-depression medications and a variety of other mental health medications. So a primary care provider is a great place to start if you have one. But even if you don't, speaking to a provider that you see in an urgent care facility or an emergency room, sometimes they can set you on a path. But even if you don't have those pathways to accessing mental health, there's some really terrific websites and hotlines or warm lines that can get you on the right foot for finding care that works for you.
Now, supposing we do decide we want to work with a therapist, and as you say, we might not know exactly what we need, what specialties. It may feel weird, like, oh, do I have to commit to this person for the long run? How do we start to feel out if there's a good a match, a good fit?
You mean with a therapist in particular?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I also want to just start by saying therapists don't expect you to match with them as sort of on the first as your first try. They expect you to do a little bit of shopping around. And so you should expect to do that, too. It's very reasonable. You're not violating any norms by speaking with a few therapists, maybe even having a couple of initial sessions before you decide whether somebody is a good fit for you. So you can start by just, if you have insurance coverage, seeing who is covered by your insurance. You can also ask for recommendations from people in your social network or from a healthcare provider. One of the therapists I talked to, one of the experts I talked to said, people are often really worried about being stigmatized and hesitate to tell people in their social networks that they're seeking mental health care. So sometimes you might, if that describes you, you may want to ask, someone I know, a friend is looking for a therapist. It seems like such an obvious trick, but you know, if you're worried about saying I'm looking for a therapist, that is one way to get over that hump. But once you do have a few names, whether from your insurance company or as recommendations, you can call them and just sort of feel out what kind of person they are. In the article that I wrote, there's a list of questions that you might try asking therapists to just get a feel for things like what types of clients they've worked with before, whether they've ever dealt with a client who's dealing with the things that you're dealing with. You can ask them about the approaches that they use in your therapy, and that may not mean anything to you at this stage, and that's okay. But sometimes therapists, you know, may have really specific ways that they like to help people. They may have specific populations they like to help or specific issues they like to help with, like grief or LGBTQ issues or, you know, aging issues. You can ask them how often they would meet with you, how long sessions last, what they would do if you were in crisis, how long they think you'll need treatment for. And all of those kinds of questions can really help you not only just get some answers to the questions that you actually have, but also get a sense with what it's like to interact with this person. Does the conversation flow easily? Do they seem happy to answer your questions and eager to make you feel comfortable? Or do you kind of get a weird vibe or feel hesitant to interact with them? So those sort of little warmer, you know, those softer signals can give you a real sense of how comfortable you're going to be talking about more challenging things with that person further on down the line.
Dr. Karen Landman is a senior reporter at Vox covering public health. Before becoming a journalist, she trained as a physician and epidemiologist. She's talking with us about how to get mental health care when you've never done it before. She wrote a guide at Vox.com. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you've sought and received help or you're a provider, what advice would you give to people looking to go to maybe therapy for the first time? How did you find mental health care that was a good match for you? Or did you face some challenges as you tried to seek it out? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk about how to find mental health care. Our guest is Dr. Karen Landman, senior reporter at Vox covering public health, also trained physician and epidemiologist. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have any questions or advice about finding or affording therapy? How has therapy changed your life if you've had access to it? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And hey, later on today, we're going to have a list of resources up at WPR.org/Central Time for communities around the state. Again, look for that this evening at WPR.org/Central Time. Dr. Landman, for people who don't have that insurance and are worried about high costs, what kind of advice do you have for them in seeking something that they can maybe afford?
Yeah, no, I can totally relate. And I will actually say, the therapist that I started seeing a couple years ago is not actually the first therapist that I ever saw. I did very briefly in my 20s see a therapist who was getting their PhD and therefore seeing patients on a free basis as part of their own training. So that meant I was seeing someone who was basically practicing giving therapy. Our sessions were being observed by a professor of theirs. And so they were getting feedback after our sessions about how our sessions went. I actually found those sessions pretty helpful. I couldn't keep attending them because of the intensity of my schooling at the time, but I thought that was a great resource. And so that is one place you might want to start. If you're in a place where there is a school of psychology where people are training to be clinical psychologists, you can check and see if they're open to seeing you as a patient. There are probably some boundaries around that, but the school will tell you what those are. Also, some providers have sliding scale fees. So you can, if you have identified a few providers that you think you might want to see, you can ask them whether they do have sliding scale fees, which means that people who can afford only a lower cost for their therapy sessions may be allowed to pay that lower cost. There are lots of other ways to get therapy other than seeing a therapist one-on-one. There are support groups in lots of parts of the country, which are often free of charge. And those may be run out of healthcare centers, but there are also a lot of nonprofit organizations that run support groups. There are other kinds of community groups that may be called something like a mutual aid organization. Depending on whether you're dealing with specific issues, sometimes for addiction, obviously, and a lot of us think about 12-step groups, those are actually a great source for a lot of mental health support for a lot of people. But we may not be thinking of it that way. But those and many, many other mutual aid groups are free of charge. It's hard to know without consulting a resource what's in your area and what exactly might be right for you. And some of the resources that I mentioned in the story and that it sounds like you'll be sharing with your listeners, mm-hmm. like NAMI, National Association for Mental Illness, I mm-hmm. believe, and Mental Health America, both of those sites have resources that can help folks find support groups and mutual aid groups and other kinds of community care services where they can get support. And, some folks simply are just not that comfortable interacting with the healthcare system or with medical providers and really feel that these are not second string approaches to their mental health. They really want to get support from people in their community who really understand them in a deeper way than they feel healthcare may understand them. So I just want to be clear that even though these may be free of charge, many people find them immensely helpful and a really great source of support. So people may really want to look into them also as a way to save money.
Right, Dr. Landman, suppose somebody's been successful. They've redone their research, found a therapist, they're able to pay for them. Can you give us some advice for that first conversation, how to establish what you're hoping to get out of working with the therapist? It may be a scary moment for people to open up in that way.
Yeah, I can imagine. So that first visit, you really want to be seeing how you interact with this person. Like, do you feel that you want to open up to this person? And you can get a sense for that whether you are seeing that person face-to-face, in person, or if you're seeing them virtually online, both of which, by the way, are perfectly valid ways to receive therapy, talk therapy. Understanding that it can be uncomfortable to open up about really personal issues and hard things when you're speaking with somebody. See what it feels like to do that with this person. Do you feel supported? Do you feel held and seen? I mean this figuratively, right? Do you feel like this person is really holding space for you and seeing you for who you are and allowing you to really open up? After the visit, you check in with yourself and ask yourself, did you feel heard? Did it feel comfortable? And were you encouraged also to talk about what you want to get out of therapy? I think people have this fear that once I start therapy, I'm going to become a therapy person and be that person for the rest of my life. And I'm never going to be able to make a decision without a therapist, or I have to keep going to therapy. That's not at all the case. I think therapy is something to be thought of as a thing you can drop into when you need it, and something that you do not have to be in for the rest of your life at all. That, in fact, for many people, it's just something they need for a few months or a few years until they get through a hard time in their life. So, but you do want to have somebody who's happy to talk to you upfront about what you think you need and how long they think it's going to take to get that. So just don't be afraid to ask questions that help you get to those answers, and to really check in with yourself and be honest with yourself about what the interaction and chemistry with that person feels like, and to shop around if you're not sure. You know, you may find after you speak with a couple other people that, yeah, I actually really did like the vibes I got from that first person I talked to better than I did the second and third. So I'm going to go back to that person. Or you may learn that actually you're looking for something different than you found in that first visit. So don't hesitate to shop around.
Dr. Landman, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me to talk about this really important issue.
Dr. Karen Landman is a senior reporter at Vox covering public health. Before becoming a journalist, she trained as an epidemiologist and physician. She talked to us about what to do when you're seeking mental health care. We'll have a list of mental health resources in Wisconsin coming up at WPR.org/Central Time later this evening. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, there's been a lot of focus lately on boosting technical skills in education to prepare people for the workforce. But are we forgetting the people stuff? A guest makes the case for more focus on the soft skills that we need at work. And as we just heard, mental health care can be hard to find. A new type of counseling is getting more attention. People call them lay therapists, with a narrower focus but possibly fewer credentials. We'll find out how it works and how it can be a piece, at least, of the overall puzzle. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.